come to order. Will members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to indicate their presence by voting? Will clerk please take the roll?
35 members present.
Representative Barnes?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. No members are excused from the call of the House today.
Will the members please rise for the invocation by Reverend Dwayne Minkler, First Church of God.
Good morning, Father, and thank you for another beautiful day. As the business of this day begins, I would ask that you would place your blessings upon each one gathered here. We would seek, Father, a spirit of unity that much could be accomplished this day. In your word we are instructed, commit your work to the Lord and it will succeed. Father, right now we claim that promise by committing all of the business at hand to you. Thank you for hearing our prayer. Amen.
Representative Abood.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread on the journal.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the prayer will be spread on the journal. Will the clerk please certify the journal for the 85th Legislative Day and House Supplement number 120.
As Chief Clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 85th day and House Supplement number 120.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the journal for the 85th Legislative Day and Journal Supplement number 120 be approved as certified by the Chief Clerk.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Will the House please stand at ease? Are there guests for introduction? Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and welcome back. In the gallery behind me is a young lady from the Kalifornsky Christian School, a constituent of Representative Malone and myself. I want you all, please, to help me welcome Michelle Brandegard.
Representative Miller.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to introduce a guest, a constituent of Representative Duncan and mine. And in doing that, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to have the leave to make an announcement, of interest to the entire body. First of all, the guest is Janice Holtz, who is in the Gallery A. And most of you perhaps know Janice as the lady who very dynamically has, for 4 years now, put together the research telethons that now statewide, which will be hosted this year on Sunday. I want to talk about two events very briefly in conjunction with that. First of all, Juno Douglas High School gym on Sunday, the basketball game, the annual game between the governor's office and the legislature will be held. And I know a number of us are thirsting for revenge because last year the Govs guys got us by just a very few points. So I'm sure that a lot of us would like to, even the score there. And in addition to that, Sunday is also a day for the fourth annual fundraiser for the telethon, research telethon, that, as I say, has been spearheaded by Janice Holtz. All the money raised goes 100% to research. There's no administrative costs. And tickets are on sale at bookstores here in Juneau, also from Kim Elton in the minority office, John Greeley, and from your own pom-pom people. So, Mr. Speaker, I hope you'll help me welcome Janice Holtz to the deliberations this morning and show her our enthusiasm for these two causes.
Representative Grissendorf?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Directly behind me in Gallery B is a good friend of mine who's been a basketball coach throughout Southeast Alaska here. He's worked with the Sea Alaska Corporation. I believe now he's with T&H. And that's Richard B. Hansen behind me.
Representative Miller?
Mr. Speaker, in Gallery B, I have a constituent of mine and a friend of mine. He's been involved in local government, a former member of the North Pole City Council. He's a teacher in my area, and he's quite involved in the Republican Party, Mr. Lyle Allison.
Representative Grusendorf?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I sat down, I saw someone else that came in and sat in Gallery B, and that's Mrs. Huna, and that's Marlene Johnson.
Are there further guests for introduction? Messages from the governor.
Dear Speaker Hayes, subject Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 691 Finance, making special appropriations for capital projects, Chapter 24, SLA 1984. This is the line item vetoes from the governor. It has been duplicated and placed on each member's desk. I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker. From the governor, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate.
The Senate approved and transmitted for consideration the citation honoring the UPIC Antigone by Senator Sackett, Vic Fisher, Ray, Ferguson, and Representatives Vaska and Fuller. The Senate has passed the following, and they are transmitted for consideration. Senate Joint Resolution Number 30, amended by Halford, Curtula, Josephson, Fakes, V. Fisher, P. Fisher, Pettijohn, Kelly, Eliason, and Sturgiluski, relating to the enforcement of child support obligations.
Senate Joint Resolution 30, amended, is referred to the Health, Education, and Social Services and Judiciary Committees. Representative Clarkson, House, please stand at ease. Resolution 30, amended, and give it only a Judiciary Committee referral.
Senate Bill 402 by Fakes, an act relating to exemptions from tax or credits against tax and providing for an effective date.
Senate Bill 402 is referred to the Finance Committee.
Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 491, Labor and Commerce, by the Labor and Commerce Committee, an act relating to weights and measures and providing for an effective date.
Labor and Commerce and Finance Committees.
Senate Bill 519 by the Finance Committee, an act relating to state support for education and providing for an effective date.
Health, Education, and Social Services and Finance Committee.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Other communications?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of standing committees?
The Committee on Resources has had sponsor substitute for House Concurrent Resolution 53, requesting the State Geographic Board to name an unnamed lake near Ketchikan as Ed Todd Lake, under consideration, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Ringstead, co-chairman, concurred in by Larson, Bussell, Gall, Vaska, Liska, Ringstead, and Euling. Sponsor substitute for House Concurrent Resolution Number 53 has no further referral. The Committee on Resources has had House Joint Resolution 75 relating to crude oil exports under consideration and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Ringstead, co-chairman, concurred in by Larson, Bussell, Liska, Ringstead, and Euling, having no recommendation, Gall and Vaska. House Joint Resolution Number 75 has no further referral. The Committee on Hess has had House Bill 412 relating to adoption medical records under consideration, recommends it be replaced with CS for House Bill 412 Hess with the same title and recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Ms. Tischer, chairman, concurred in by Euling, Martin, Davis, Kopen, and Gall, Tischer, and Pestinger. House Bill 412 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The Committee on Labor and Commerce has had House Bill 505 relating to insurance under consideration and recommends it be replaced with CS for House Bill 505 Labor and Commerce with the same title and attaches a zero fiscal note and recommends as follows. The report was signed by Mr. Cowdery, chairman, signing Dupass, Furness, and Cowdery, having no recommendation, Ringstead, Pestinger, Euling, and Kopanen. House Bill 505 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The Committee on Hess has had House Bill 596 relating to public construction under consideration, recommends it be replaced with CS for House Bill 596 Hess with a new title. It recommends as follows and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Ms. Tischer, chairman, signing Dupass, Tischer, and Martin, having no recommendation, Euling, Pestinger. Kopanen signed, do not pass this pointless CS. Davis signed, object to the procedures taken by the committee. And Gall signed, do not pass. House Bill 596 has a further referral to the State Affairs Committee. The Committee on Labor and Commerce has had House Bill 610 relating to construction contractors under consideration, recommends it be replaced with CS for House Bill 610 Labor and Commerce with a new title, and reports it back as follows and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by Mr. Cowdery, chairman, signing Dupass, Furness, and Cowdery, signing no recommendation, Ringstead, Pestinger, Euling, and Kopanen. House Bill 610 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Committee on Labor and Commerce has had House Bill 705 relating to Real Estate Surety Fund under consideration and recommends it do pass and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by Mr. Cowdery, Chairman, signing do pass, Ewing, Pestinger, Ringstad, Furness, and Cowdery. House Bill 705 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Duncan?
May we have it at ease, please?
House, please stand at ease. Will the House please come back to order? Reports of special committees?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of citations and resolutions?
Citation honoring Lawrence E. Heiner, 1984 Interior Business Leader of the Year, requested by Representative Davis. I have no resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, and reference of bills?
House Bill 714 by the Labor and Commerce Committee, an act relating to barbers and hairdressers and providing for an effective date.
House Bill 714 is referred to the Labor and Commerce Committee.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us to consideration of the daily calendar. Representative Malone.
Thank you, Speaker. Speaker, I'm going to announce a Democratic caucus on recess, but before I do that, if it's in order, I would like to move and ask unanimous consent that the citation honoring Nancy Lord be brought up as a special order of business at this time.
Is there objection? Hearing none so ordered, will the clerk please read the citation?
Citation honoring Nancy Lord by Senators Vic Fisher, Sturgiluski, and Gilman, and Representatives Malone, Vasca, Kopanen, and Davis.
Representative Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the citation be adopted.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the citation is adopted. Representative Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaker, I'd like to announce there will be a House Democratic caucus on a motion to recess.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to ask, make a motion to move down the calendar to special orders.
Is there objection?
Objection.
There is objection.
For all citizens, I'd like to have privilege of floor to speak on Anchorage, veto cuts, people on the third floor, public safety, children, and pork.
Yeah, the floor, Representative Ward.
Thank you very much, Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I noticed with concern. I was gonna even object for a while when a message from the governor said about his $108 million worth of projects and why he had to veto it and had to get rid of these things. And from his news report, he's going to teach this body and the other body some restraints because they're out there pork barreling all these types of things and having all kinds of just terrible spending habits. Well, Mr. Speaker, I don't think this can go unanswered. Now, he's already backtracked and said, well, gee, I'm sorry that I took Northern Lights Boulevard away from Anchorage because I don't know how to read. I forgot I only live a half a block from there, and the children were killed on that street, which he does. He also forgets he comes from Anchorage, Mr. Speaker. But I draw it to your attention and to the body's attention. I hope you've had a chance to see those veto cuts. Because what he did, yes, he did take $108 million out and some more out, a couple hundred million, put $100 million into the permanent fund. He took that $100 million out of the rail belt. He took that $100 million out of the rail belt, took $200,000 out of Southeastern, out of Juneau, which is kind of amazing. But I guess that's just where your political fortunes are laid. And these are political cuts. And I do cast aspersions. I'm going to just absolutely, it's blatant. And I'm glad to see the other bodies finally caught on. They're about a year and a half late, but at least they're catching on. I don't think it's going to do much good because the bets have been placed. The tallies have been taken. Anybody that knows how to read a capital budget sees exactly where the real pork is. It amazes me that within Anchorage area or district, almost every major road project that was identified, the municipality of Anchorage, the Anchorage caucus, has been rejected by this governor, supposedly statewide vision. Yes, but he did get the coastal trail for the joggers. That's really neat. I don't jog because I got the bad knee from playing basketball here, defending the house is good. We beat the governor's office too. But I think this is terrible that we would have a situation where first, it was a mistake that all the schools were vetoed out of the same district. Okay. Then it was a mistake that the road was vetoed on Northern Lights Boulevard where the children were killed. Mr. Speaker, I pose to you that there are no mistakes. What we have is we have a situation where the governor of the state of Alaska is down here within the legislative halls, and he is trying to legislate legislation. He's trying to appropriate funds. If you go through these various appropriation items, what he has done, he has centered out a few districts in order to shaft the town of Anchorage. That is exactly what's happened. He has regionalized the state. He has taken the rail belt in its total, with the exception of a few districts, I must admit that, but not any of the public safety, not any of the transportation, and he has successfully gutted the transportation problems and increased them for the city of Anchorage. He has gutted education within the Anchorage area. He has punished Anchorage, but I, for one, don't feel that he has, as his quotes, teach the legislators responsibility. I don't feel that I myself have learned any lessons. I really don't. Because this body passed a capital project. The other body passed one, and we approved it. A few individuals in here went up and cut their own deal. That will come out. But the city of Anchorage, your city and my city, Mr. Speaker, have suffered the hands of the worst blatant type or regional politics that I have ever been witness to. And I am ashamed of the man on the third floor. Absolutely ashamed, and I think this is very petty of him. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent the House stand in recess to the call of the chair.
Representative Abboud, an announcement first.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There will be a House Majority Caucus immediately upon the motion to recess.
Without objection, the House stands in recess to the call of the chair. Will members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to indicate their presence by voting? Will the clerk please take the roll?
28 members present.
The members who are just coming into the chambers would please indicate their presence by voting. I'm sorry. Will the clerk please note the members who just arrived in the chambers? I see over 30 members. Representative Szymanski just arrived. Representative Flood. Will the clerk please read the first item on today's calendar?
Sponsor substitute for House Bill number 470 by Fritz Clarkson McBride by request. An act making a special appropriation to the Department of Education, Alaska History Commission, to produce a documentary film relating to the participation of Alaska in World War II and providing for an effective date. The Committee on HES has had the bill under consideration and recommends it do pass and attaches a letter of intent. The report was signed by Ms. Tischer, Chairman, concurred in by Tischer, Martin, Pestinger, Euling, Davis, and Kopanen. The Committee on Finance has had the bill under consideration, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for Sponsor Substitute for House Bill 470 Finance with a new title, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Adams, Chairman, concurred in by Adams, Martin, Furness, Lindauer, Duncan, Jaroff, Hurlburt, and Fritz. I have one Committee Substitute on my desk. Mr.
Representative
Speaker.
Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent the Finance Committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Bill 470 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the Finance Committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Bill 470 is adopted in lieu of the original bill. Does the clerk have amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent the Committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Bill 470 Finance be considered engrossed and passed to third reading and placed on final passage.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Will the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
Committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Bill 470, financed by the Finance Committee. An act making a special appropriation to the Department of Education, Alaska Historical Commission, to produce a documentary film relating to the participation of Alaska in World War II and providing for an effective date.
So debate. Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the Finance Committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Bill 470 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
39 yeas, no nays.
The Finance Committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Bill 470 has passed the House. Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent to the roll call vote on passage. Committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Bill 470 finance be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Speaker, there is a letter of intent.
Will the clerk please read the letter of intent?
It's a Hess letter of intent.
Journal, the journal reference, please.
Yeah, a letter of intent is located on page 2855 of the journal.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent that the Hess Committee letter of intent be adopted.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill 548 by Herman, Hurlburt, M.W. Miller, Schultz, Fritz, Bettesworth, Gall, Jaroff, and McBride. An act relating to state assistance for community health aid programs and providing for an effective date. The Committee on Hess has had the bill under consideration, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 548 Hess with the same title, recommends it do pass and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by Ms. Tischer, Chairman. Signing Dupass, Euling, Gall, Tischer, Pestinger, and Martin. Having no recommendation, Kopanen and Davis. The Committee on Finance has had the bill under consideration. Recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 548 Finance with the same title. Recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Adams, Chairman. Concurred in by Adams, Martin, Jaroff, Duncan, Furness, Hurlburt, Lindauer, and Fritz. I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 548 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the Finance Committee substitute is adopted in lieu of the original bill. Does the clerk have amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent the committee substitute for House Bill 548 finance be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading and placed on final passage.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Will the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
Committee substitute for House Bill 548, financed by the Finance Committee. An act relating to state assistance for community health aid programs and providing for an effective date.
Is there debate? Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 548 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
38 yeas, one nay.
The Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 548 has passed the House. Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent of the roll call vote on passage. Committee substitute for House Bill 548 finance be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar? Representative Clarkson? Will the House please stand at ease? Representative Szymanski?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to serve notice for reconsideration in my vote on House Bill 548.
Representative Szymanski has given notice of reconsideration for his vote on House Bill 548. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill Number 650 by the House Special Committee on State Loans, an act making special appropriations for certain state loan and grant programs and providing for an effective date. The Committee on Loans has had House Bill 650 under consideration and recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 650 Loans with the same title and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Euling, Chairman, signing do pass, Euling, Pestinger, and Furness. Kopanen signed increase alternative energy and rural electrification loans. The Committee on Finances had House Bill 650 under consideration, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 650 Loans, and recommends it do pass and attaches a letter of intent. The report was signed by Mr. Adams, Chairman, concurred in by Adams, Bettesworth, Martin, Furness, Hurlburt, and Fritz. Zaroff signed do pass after increasing Section 2. Lindauer has no recommendation, and Duncan signed do pass after amending Section 2. I have one Committee Substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent that the Loans Committee substitute for House Bill 650 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the Loans Committee substitute is adopted in lieu of the original bill. Does the clerk have amendments?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Amendment number one by Mr. Duncan. Page 1, line 12. Delete $45 million. Insert $65 million.
Representative Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment.
There is objection. Representative Duncan.
Mr. Speaker, there's information being passed out right now. I can, I guess, proceed with the debate. But some of that information is going to be relevant to the debate. Mr. Speaker, the amendment is very straightforward. It increases the amount of money that would be appropriated to the Department of Community and Regional Affairs for non-conforming rural and non-owner-occupied housing loans from $45 million to $65 million. Speaker, as I've been looking at the loan package, and as we've been discussing that in committee, and as I've been following this process through the legislature, I have found that this is one area of the loan bill where there is not sufficient money, in my judgment. Mr. Speaker, I've had several constituents contact me over the past few months, and I'm sure the rest of you have had constituents contact you, concerned about the fact that the urban portion of non-conforming loans is out of money at the present time. And that those people who want financial commitments, who want to go ahead and build under the non-conforming loan program in the urban areas of the state are not able to do that because of a lack of funds. Mr. Speaker, not only is that a problem now, but with the level of appropriation of $45 million, that's going to be a problem in fiscal year 85, a problem which is going to occur 10 weeks after July 1st, which means, Mr. Speaker, by mid-September of this year, there will not be sufficient money to fund the non-conforming housing loans. I have had distributed on your desk three letters from the Department of Community and Regional Affairs Housing Assistance Division, all three from Barbara Morris Quinn, who's director of that, in response to inquiries I've made. I've asked three different times because after the first response, I heard different information, so I re-asked the question, and after the second response, I heard different information, so I re-asked the question again. The bottom line is all three answers are the same. If you refer it to the packet that has been passed out to you, they're in reverse order, but the latest letter of March 30th, 1984, the bottom line is if the $45 million level is maintained, we estimate having only 10 weeks of funding in this category. I am certain that the banks and realtors in the urban areas using this program are unaware that full financing may be unavailable in the future. The department has previously assumed that the governor's request level of $65 million would be met. The important point there on that March 30th letter is that if we only fund it $45 million within 10 weeks after the beginning of the fiscal year, that program is going to be out of money because there's a lot of demand for it. The day before, on March 29th, if you'll refer to the second letter, I also asked a question. I asked in a different way, and I said, please give me an indication if there's any carryover in any of these programs that would impact this. The answer came back that they were requesting $65 million, that that's what the governor wanted for this program, that it has been reduced to $45 million in the House legislation that's before us, and that that causes serious problems, that the $46 million that they finally come up with after they add interest is only 60% of the actual demand predicted for fiscal year 1985. That if we fund this at $45 million as in this bill, we're only answering 60% of the need. And they broke it down by category. For rural owner-occupied loans, there would be $33 million available. No carryover is projected in that category, so all that would be available would be $33 million. For rural non-owner-occupied loans, there would be $4,560,000 with $5 million carryover. For non-conforming loans, $9,390,000, Mr. Speaker. The second page of that letter, and it's underlined for emphasis, the second page of that letter says, duration of loan funds vary greatly with market conditions, health of the economy, and construction season demands. Rural non-owner-occupied funds will be sufficient to sustain the year, but with a level of appropriation of $45 million, non-conforming funds would last approximately 10 weeks after appropriation. Approximately 10 weeks after appropriation. So for the urban areas of the state, Mr. Speaker, 10 weeks after appropriation, which is mid-September, that program is going to be out of money. And people who are building with in the non-conforming loan program won't have that program available to them. And finally, the third letter, which is really the earliest letter of March 23rd, the same answer came back. It is our position that the governor's fiscal year 85 budget request for the Housing Assistance Loan Fund adequately addresses a non-conforming need for next year, if fully funded at $65 million. If fully funded at $65 million. So every way I ask the question, and I ask it in two or three different ways so I could cover all bases, is that $65 million is needed. The $45 million will address 60% of the needs, that there is no carryover that's going to help this program out, especially in the urban areas of the state, and that if this legislature only appropriates $45 million within 10 weeks, which is mid-September, within 10 weeks, that program will be out of money. The other important point, of course, and it's also referred to in this letter, is the fact that there are many people right now waiting for money to be made available in this program who have been waiting for several months because they're out of fiscal year 84 money. So they're going to have to wait now. In fiscal year 85, there'll be money available, but it'll only last for 10 weeks, and then people are going to have to wait again for another 8, 9, 10 months, whatever the figure is. Mr. Speaker, based on the information provided here, based on the information provided by the department, I think it's very important, Mr. Speaker, that the legislature adopt this amendment, that the House adopt this amendment. $65 million is the amount required to fund this program. Thank you.
Representative Adams.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I personally believe that the $45 million for the rural housing is sufficient funds, that each of us in our different areas need to take fiscal responsibilities, and I believe that even though this is 60% of the allocations, that we can both best take care of the housing needs in rural areas. One of the things that people need to understand on this particular issue, that past audit has shown there is poor management within the rural housing division. Poor management in charging different interest rates to rural residents. Poor management by giving money for personal labor, which is against the regulations. And I believe that $45 million is sufficient to take care of rural areas this coming year, even though it's 60% of the needed $77 million. But I know there are many areas that we cannot fully fund 100% for different areas. This is one area that I think $45 million is sufficient. Thank you.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I speak in favor of the amendment. Actually, the way this program's worked this last year, the rural areas haven't been the ones that have been without the money. It's been areas around Fairbanks, which also uses this program. And I've had constituents since December talking to me about the need for additional money in the program. There was sufficient money in the program for the rural applicants, but there wasn't money in the program since last December for the many people in Fairbanks who are trying to get money in this program, and it's worked as a real hardship for the constituents of mine, and I speak in favor of the amendment.
Representative Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In response to the finance chairman, he's right. The rural areas of the state will be fine with the $45 million appropriation. He's absolutely correct. There will be sufficient money there to fund the rural portion of the program. Again, I would ask you to look at the March 29th, 1984 letter, page 2. It's a letter from Barbara Morris Quinn, dated March 29, 1984, page 2. And I quote, duration of loan funds vary greatly with market conditions, health of the economy, and construction season demands. The finance chairman is correct. Rural non-owner occupied funds will be sufficient to sustain the year. The rural program will not be hurt at this level of appropriation. However, non-conforming funds would last approximately 10 weeks after appropriation. And that's the area where the urban areas of this state, Anchorage and Fairbanks and Juneau and the rest of them, that's where they come up short. So the rural areas of the state will last, but the urban areas, will last 10 weeks.
Question. Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, I just want to, if I may, emphasize that same point even further. 10 weeks, when this fund runs out in September and the home builders contact you and say, hey, I thought you guys passed a loan package for building homes for Alaskans. Please don't blame the governor. Please don't blame the people in charge of the program. Please remember that you were told on this floor today that the appropriation, the skimpy appropriation we're projecting right now, will last a lousy 10 weeks. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Winty.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think every year when we go back and talk to our constituents, we have established assisting people in this state getting housing as one of the top priorities that we have established. And frankly, we have one of the best programs in the country in dealing with that. But at the same time, I think we have to tell our constituents that we do have an inequitable program to the extent that there's a significant portion of our citizens cannot afford to participate and receive the benefit from our oil dollars through the existing housing programs. For those of us that are as rich as we are on this floor with the salaries we receive, we can afford to go through the normal Alaska housing program and qualify for the programs that are available there. However, the non-conforming areas, particularly in the urban areas, that are not being adequately funded without this amendment, are primarily hitting the lower income, the people who are being treated in an inequitable way in terms of benefits from our oil revenues. We're getting the benefits, or those like us are getting the benefits, but it's the lower income, the wage earner, who has to get a lower priced house, which are normally those that fit within this non-conforming program to the extent that there's either the design of the home or some construction portion of the home. It does not qualify for the Alaska housing. Those are usually the lower priced homes. So what we are attempting to do here without the adoption of this amendment is to say, yes, there is an equity in our housing program and how we deal with it in Alaska, and it is going to be the position of this legislature. We're going to make it worse, and we're going to make it even more inequitable, because even though we have a non-conforming program, we're going to not even fund but 60% of that. Now, there has been restraint in the governor's request. The governor came down, and I don't even agree with him on this to the extent he only requested funding 77%. That's what that $65 million will accommodate, 77% of their demand. So there was restraint shown. So what we are telling the governor and what we're now telling the lower-income people of this state who are having more difficulty than any other group in getting adequate housing is that we're going to apply restraint, and it's going to be on you, because we know the upper-income people are taken care of at 100%. So I think it's a bad decision to even bring to this floor a recommendation of a funding level of $45 million. And I would strongly urge us to adopt the amendment to at least fund it up to 77%. And I would challenge the Commissioner of Community and Regional Affairs to even hold up to that 10-week schedule, because we have been there has been a lack of funding for a number of weeks already, and there is a backlog building up of people that as soon as July 1 comes around are going to be rushing in there. And I would bet any of you here today that 10 weeks is not even going to begin to come close to for how long these funds will last. And I wouldn't be surprised to be less than half of that. And I would hope that when you go back, if you do not adopt this amendment, that when you go back to your constituents and the inequities of the housing program that every one of us have heard is brought up, that if you don't vote for this amendment, you pony up to the fact that you want to who want to exacerbate and compound that inequity, and that's your record of voting on this floor. I strongly urge all the members to vote for this amendment.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 1 to the Loans Committee substitute for House Bill 650? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
15 yeas, 25 nays.
House has failed to adopt Amendment Number 1. Does the clerk have further amendments?
No,
Representative Clarkson? Excuse me. Will the House please stand at ease? There was another amendment placed on the clerk's desk, Amendment Number 2. Will the clerk please read Amendment Number 2?
Amendment Number 2 by Clarkson, Flood, and Zemanski. It starts page 1, amend funding information to read. It's 2 pages long. It has been duplicated and placed on each member's desk.
Representative Clarkson?
Mr. Speaker, I move the amendment and ask unanimous consent.
There is objection, Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, this amendment, the items in this amendment will look familiar to all members of this body. We have voted to approve all of these appropriations one time before. These are appropriations that have been vetoed by the governor in the last few days. They have been identified, Mr. Speaker, as particularly high priorities of the municipality of Anchorage, and I'd like to run through them briefly. Section 12 provides $7 million for the West Northern Lights design and right-of-way acquisition that many people in Anchorage are familiar with. Section 13 is $3.2 million for the 100th Avenue extension construction, $3.5 million for a grant to the municipality for the police headquarters construction. Mr. Speaker, there were two items placed in two separate appropriation bills, both of which vetoed by the governor. They total this amount, so you see two separate appropriations earlier. Section 15, Mr. Speaker, $3.7 million for a solid waste disposal facility. And Section 16, $600,000 for a grant to the municipality for Point Campbell hazardous waste removal. Mr. Speaker, again, I think many members of this body are familiar with these amendments. They have been approved by this body before. We heard a passionate speech this morning, Mr. Speaker, by a member of this body that the governor perhaps had made some errors in his appropriations in the Anchorage area. I am concerned that that may well be the case and that he, in fact, might have vetoed projects that were high-priority Anchorage projects, that, in fact, if they were placed back on his desk, that he might not veto them. I think that we have the obligation to give him that opportunity. These are projects that need to be funded. I assume, of course, that all the members here that voted for these the first time will vote for them this time as well. There is an important additional reason to support this appropriation, and that is, Mr. Speaker, that we could well avoid the necessity of a joint session to consider the question of veto overrides on these issues if we could take care of them by rapidly returning them to the governor's desk for his approval. If we didn't need a veto override session, then certainly we could move right along with this session and get it over. I think that, again, these are projects that we are on record in support of, and it's simply a matter of returning them to the governor to correct what at least one member of this body believes to be errors by the governor.
Representative Barnes?
Mr. Speaker, I'd like the floor to ask for a motion. I make a motion that we table this amendment.
You haven't been recognized, Representative Ford.
Representative Ford, I have the floor.
Representative Barnes?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, yesterday I had a letter from three members of the other body that this amendment looks very much like the agreement that was asked for in the other letter, that we have a veto override session for specific items being very much the same as those that are proposed in this letter. My response at that time was that these are not the only projects, Mr. Speaker, that are deserving of being passed not only by this body and the other body, but by the governor as well. When we put ourselves in a position of picking and choosing what projects are the utmost importance after we have chosen to begin with, that the total package was indeed what we felt was necessary for the safety and welfare of the people of this state. And then along comes those that think they know better, and they'll choose one or two or three to get themselves off the hook. Mr. Speaker, the governor had a press conference today. In that press conference, I think that it was very interesting to note that he told the members of the press that we wouldn't get the votes to override his vetoes, and he told them the reason why. It's so sickening to me, I won't even tell the members of the body the reason why. But rather, instead, I will promise representative from downtown Anchorage, the representative from South Anchorage, and the representative that's also from South Anchorage, that they're going to get an opportunity to vote to override the governor's vetoes. And I assure you, you're going to get that opportunity to vote on these particular items in the governor's veto, because we're going to vote on all of them, because they're all important to the people of this state. They're all important to the safety and welfare of the people of this state, not just these few little projects that are brought out here to try to get somebody off the hook. It's not enough. It's not enough when, in fact, you allow the governor of this state to start to appropriate money by guaranteeing a no override on the veto. Mr. Speaker, I urge all members of this body to not be put into a game-playing session, and that's what we have here with this amendment.
Point of order.
State your point.
Please, of the sponsor of the amendment.
My goodness, Mr. Speaker, I would retract that. I for sure thought I said games, and I didn't say anything about anybody's motives, but I will retract that.
I'm not sure that it's necessary to retract it, but you may wish, if you wish.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it really saddens me when you try pulling out two or three or four projects out of a community, a total community, not only of Anchorage, but a total community of this state that has been devastated by a man on the third floor playing games with the safety and welfare and well-being of the total population of this state. We have children that does not have adequate schools. We have people that does not have adequate running water. And indeed, in Anchorage, we need a new police headquarters building. And indeed, East West Northern Lights Boulevard is one of the travesties on our transportation system in Anchorage. But games playing with these amendments will not take care of the problem. When you have had a community, and not just of the interior, but a total community of this state devastated by gubernatorial vetoes, I think it is sickening that such an amendment would be brought to this floor and offered up in place of an override of the total vetoes. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The House, please stand at ease.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaking on the amendment, I think that the gentleman might have good intention, but I very much feel that we may be going about the wrong way. You see, if we will be willing to override the vetoes of the governors, we can have jobs within 2 weeks on the streets. Within 2 weeks, they can start with West Northern Lights Boulevard. Within 2 weeks, they can start fixing the leaks at the Clark Junior High School, the leaks at Rush and Jack Handicap School. They can get those jobs immediately. Within weeks, thousands of people can be off the welfare line from the winter seasons and go to work. You know? This route here, it's hard to say how long this would take here, but that's a good delay tactic. But I'm really concerned, and I'm going to speak for you from the heart. I know the governor said this afternoon, we all got that wire, that he's already bought commitments. He does not want to go upon a certain spending limit. He needs money for the major project funds. Remember that your governor said he needs those money. We don't know if it's $400 million, $300 million, whatever it is. We don't know what it's for either, but that doesn't matter. He's got a commitment. He wants someone to find money, and I think that you're making it much harder on him by coming up with these projects that he said that are low priority or alphabetically low. I understand last night they took a little longer to change their minds on veto because they reversed the alphabet, but they didn't know how to do that. So that's why it took longer. I think that if you're serious about this, let's look at the whole state. And there's some of these gentlemen who evidently the governor said he's got them sold. Maybe you bought. Okay, either way. We don't know who bought or who sold, but he made it clear that he got you. And, well, you got him one way or the other. The University of Fairbanks, statewide, we have students all over, and especially Anchorage. A lot of kids go to Fairbanks. And with the new upgrading and the classrooms there, and the new upgrading in the libraries, they can start immediately. And the enrollment increase in Fairbanks, which is expected anywhere from 8% to 15%, and I think they're going to have higher than that because they got, for the first time, all the programs would be of such nature that a student can get a degree in 4 years. If you neglect University of Fairbanks in this bill, then I think that you shut down a whole year and maybe 2 years. And here again, more and more thousands of kids will be going out of state rather than attending in-state. So I really think, even though you may have made this in good intention to make up for what the governor goofed, that maybe it's best to talk with him to have him reconsider the override bill as the most expedient way to have these jobs under construction and 1,000 people working within a month. Thank you.
Representative Furness?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, on the surface of looking at this amendment, it's not really a bad idea. But, Mr. Speaker, I share with this body that this is perhaps just part of the overall problem. Mr. Speaker, when the governor of this state ran for governor, he indicated one of his goals was to bring Alaska together. Well, Mr. Speaker, I think he's done that. He's brought Alaska together because of his vindictive attitude towards many cities throughout Alaska. Mr. Speaker, the only person that this piece of legislation, this amendment is going to help are those persons who have not cut a deal with the governor. As I recall today in a press conference, he's indicated that he's brought sufficient minority votes to not override his veto. But, Mr. Speaker, I think the burden of proof is upon this legislative body and the one in the other House. The burden of proof is that we have taken priority lists throughout the state of Alaska. We've used the list of the University of Alaska, the school districts, and the municipalities. We were told at the beginning of the budget cycle that if you send me a project that's not on those lists, you can be assured that they'd be vetoed. But if you follow that list, you follow those prioritized lists, they should be given the adequate consideration. Mr. Speaker, when we look at some of those cuts, the $7 million Northern Lights, it'd be very difficult under any scenario, particularly coming from Anchorage, to have cut that project by mistake. Mr. Speaker, I serve on this body that the ink is still wet on the veto and the line items and lining out the project that's on this amendment today. And if I had my druthers, I guess I'd jump at this measly bit of monies at the expense of the rest of the state. Mr. Speaker, I think this state is unified. This state has had enough of the governor's vindictive approach in cutting projects. Mr. Speaker, I think that there are sufficient votes to override the governor's veto. And the makers of this amendment is trying to escape that reality, and that they're going to have to sit here and push the red button.
State your point, Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, the gentleman who's making this speech has gone from casting aspersions and casting names, using the word vindictive and other things like that, from the governor to the maker of the motion. Mr. Speaker, I just want to, if you allow me a brief latitude, reflect back a few days when we had the joint session in this House. It was a real joy to me to hear the members of the other body rise and debate vigorously,
Mr. Speaker,
and
I don't
convincingly
think
without bringing up
I
other people's names and bringing up other people's motives and labeling them as vindictive or labeling them anything else.
Mr. Speaker.
And Mr. Speaker, I would ask you to admonish the members of your caucus not to have your members use that kind of language. If they can't convince us on the merits of the statement, I suggest, Mr. Speaker, that they are not sufficiently persuasive to be in this body.
Mr. Speaker.
On the point of order, Representative Barnes.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to speak to the point of order raised by the minority leader, who I believe was out of order because he didn't state a point of order. And that being, Mr. Speaker, that nowhere in the joint rules or Mason's manual does it say something about questioning somebody's motives outside these chambers. It says inside these chambers. I don't think he can show me where it says that you can't talk about the governor's vetoes on this House floor. If you can, I'd be glad to see it.
Mr. Speaker, if I may continue,
on the point of order, on the point of order first, sir. Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, we can talk about the vetoes and their merits and demerits for 24 hours, and I'll have no objection whatsoever. What is objectionable is bringing into the conversation motives of the gentleman on the third floor. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker.
I will caution the members at least to follow that portion of Mason's dealing with decorum. And certainly certain words that we use from time to time in this body and most recently do not add to the decorum of the debate. Representative Furness.
Point of information. Speaker, I don't know of any other word to describe them.
Representative Furness, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I will apologize to the minority leader. But, Mr. Speaker, I would contend that the facts are here and the facts are there. That there have been massive budget cuts. We have followed the original rules of the game, and that is to use prioritized lists. We've done that. Mr. Speaker, I believe that people across the state of Alaska are unified. They're unified against the blatant action of somebody, and it's not a person on this floor, since it appears that I'm stepping out of line if I mention the person on the third floor. I'll simply say somebody. Mr. Speaker, I would recommend that this body reject this amendment and let's all 40 members stand and be counted. Let's all 40 members, hopefully tomorrow and early tomorrow, vote to override those vetoes. And let's not piecemeal it as it is today, because I take note that this amendment only addresses Anchorage projects. There are projects in Fairbanks. There are projects in Kenai, there are projects in Delta Junction and Glen Allen, all through the rail belt, Mr. Speaker. That is the only fair thing to do. This body should be commended that here, up to this point, we have followed a unified action. We put together a budget bill in record time. The chief administrator of this state had ample opportunity to interact and to say 900 is too high, cut it to 700. That never happened, Mr. Speaker. All the governor said in this instance was follow those prioritized lists. We have done that. And Mr. Speaker and members of this floor, we owe it to each other. We owe it to the people of the state of Alaska to stand again and be counted. Tomorrow in a joint session or whenever that session is called, let's keep that unity going within this legislative session. Let's not let three people or a handful of persons, regardless of what their commitments are, disrupt that unified system. Mr. Speaker, again, I beg upon this body, let's defeat this amendment. It does not serve the purpose of the state of Alaska. Thank you.
Representative M.W. Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's not too often that I take the floor, but this amendment on the surface is a good amendment. There was a lot of projects in here which are greatly needed in Anchorage. But, Mr. Speaker, to mention words that have been addressed to the majority on this floor by the minority, I believe that this is a piecemeal approach to the problem. I don't know all of the Anchorage projects, but if we go to some projects out of Fairbanks, I have a lot of fire service areas in my district, Mr. Speaker. As you know, fire service areas meets the needs of homeowners, businesses, very life safety. Mr. Speaker, I have a hospital in my district. I had $2 million vetoed out of that hospital. Mr. Speaker, I had $218,000 vetoed of pediatrics equipment for that hospital, Mr. Speaker, for children. There's a lot of other good projects in this state, Mr. Speaker. This amendment addresses many good projects. Delta Junction has many good projects. Sitka has many good projects. But let's not address it in this piecemeal approach that we have before us. Mr. Speaker, I plead to the other members of this body, let us address the state as a whole. Let us put this regionalism behind us for a change. Let's just not address one section of the state. Let us be statesmen and address all sections of this state. Mr. Speaker, we have no guarantee that these projects won't be vetoed again. They were vetoed once. Mr. Speaker, the only way to make sure that they won't be vetoed again is to override the vetoes on 691 and the other three bills, Mr. Speaker. And at the same time, we're addressing the other needs of this state also, just not one section of this state, Mr. Speaker. So with that, Mr. Speaker, I would urge the defeat of this amendment. And when we have the joint session, Mr. Speaker, let us be 40 statesmen on this floor, and let us override the veto so we, on 691 and the other three bills, so we can meet the needs of the entire state, Mr. Speaker, just not one portion of it. Thank you.
Representative Flood.
Thank you. The word piecemeal has been kicked around an awful lot, and maybe it's the piecemeal approach to the budget that we should really be considering, too. We're sending that up and piecemeal, and maybe we should do it as one budget, one comprehensive review of all the capital projects. That may have helped. And I'd like to say something about this amendment. First of all, I'm going to vote in support of it. And this amendment was drawn up this morning, long before the governor's press conference this afternoon. And I guess I need a reality check. I thought I heard people here this morning talking about how, or complaining how the man on the third floor vetoed one of Anchorage's most important projects. And that, of course, is West Northern Lights Boulevard. We know what the problems are there. A couple of children have died there. I think it's an important project. I don't think anyone will dispute that. But we have the opportunity now to put it back along with other projects that we all consider to be very important for the city of Anchorage. I think because the amendment's being offered by Anchorage Democrats, it's not acceptable. This isn't a partisan issue. We should be concerned about everything that's on this amendment, and we should all support it. The debate's beginning to sound like children. I don't want you to give it back to me. I want the man who took it away from me to give it back to me. I mean, that is childish. We can act like adults and address this now while we have the opportunity. Pass it, get these projects back in where they belong, and really be statesmen, to quote the member from Fairbanks. We have the opportunity to do it, and I think we can do it with this amendment. And I would like your support. Thank you.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. At this time, I hope that the people will do the same thing with this amendment that I'm going to do with it. And as soon as I'm finished here, I'm going to put it in the appropriate spot. This is hogwash. And poppycock, as far as I'm concerned, is a waste of my time as a legislator to be sitting here debating it and be talking about the amendment. This thing, as far as I'm concerned, the governor said, no, he doesn't want it. Now, how many times do you have to put something before the man and he tells you, no, he doesn't want it? How many times do you have to do that before you learn? If he wanted it, they would be in the bills. It'd be in 691 or the other bill, 635. He said no. He doesn't want these projects. So why are you trying to put the projects in? It doesn't make sense. It's an absolute waste of my time. Believe me, I'm one person that knows. When the governor says no, I believe him.
Representative Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to take just a couple minutes to talk about what's really been happening here over the last few days, if I could, and it relates to this amendment. Mr. Speaker, we've heard some talk from the majority leader, for example, saying that the gentleman on the third floor has been playing games with the lives of the people in this state. We heard, Mr. Speaker, another member from Anchorage with the ego on his desk here
saying that there was a vindictive attitude surfacing here, and that that vindictive attitude was coming from the man on the third floor. Mr. Speaker, I disagree with both of those statements, and I want to explain why. Mr. Speaker, I think what the gentleman on the third floor has been saying to this body since day one of this legislative session has been saying to this majority, and that is one of the rules of the game that you and the rest of the majority tended to ignore, was that he wanted a complete and responsible spending plan presented to him so that he could make a judgment as to the total amount of dollars available, what we were going to spend the money on, and what projects were really going to be funded this year. Mr. Speaker, that was completely ignored by you and others. There was not a complete spending plan put together. There was not a complete spending plan sent to the governor's desk. And, Mr. Speaker, what I think you saw as a result of that was that certain projects were sent back.
State your point, Representative Pester.
I would just like to lay my foundation that the arguments are not relevant to the amendment before you. I'm just laying my foundation so if the argument continues, I may bring it up again pursuant to the rules.
Mr. Speaker, you should never lay a foundation on sand.
We, although I hate to try to bring this debate into the amendment at this point in time, we do have an amendment, a specific amendment here. Been giving a great deal of latitude, Representative
Speaker,
Duncan.
I was only replying, of course, to the debate that's gone before, and
yes.
I appreciate the fact that the gentleman from Anchorage continues to interrupt people when they're speaking so that he thinks they'll interrupt their train of thought. It's very difficult to interrupt someone's train of thought when they don't have a train of thought. And I'm just kind of going along here with no. So it doesn't work, Mr. Speaker. But to get back to my train of thought.
Yeah, the floor.
I thought he was finished. I'm sorry.
No, Mr. Speaker, the point is, and the point is clear, the word's vindictive, the fact that the charge has been made that someone's been playing games don't hold any water. The statement made by the member who used to have the ego on his desk, who said that we have not been following the rules of the game and the only rule was that that be on a priority list in municipalities, is incorrect. The main rule of this whole game, Mr. Speaker, and that's a rule that's been laid down by the governor time after time after time, is that we have to have a full and responsible spending plan presented to him so that he'll know the direction the state is going to go or the direction the legislature wants to take this state as far as total appropriations go. We haven't had that to this point. The result was, Mr. Speaker, that we did see a number of vetoes. We saw a number of vetoes because the governor wants, needs, and should have a total spending package presented to him. Mr. Speaker, I'd be the first to admit that this isn't a total spending package either, but it's a whole lot closer than what you got us to up to this point. For one thing, we know now, a lot better than we knew 3 weeks ago, how the operating budget was going to come down. We've got a real good idea what the total amount's going to be expended there. I think the governor has a good idea at this point also. We know, Mr. Speaker, that we've addressed the Susitna clause and what the cost of that buyout's going to be. We know, Mr. Speaker, that we have appropriated in this House the money for the four-dam pool situation. We know, Mr. Speaker, that there's now $714 million on the governor's desk for capital projects. We've got a much better idea of what the total spending plan for this state is now than we had 2 weeks ago or 2 days ago or 3 days ago. Mr. Speaker, that's why the vetoes were made. Not because there's a vindictive attitude, not because there's not concern with the people of this state or with the lives and safety of children around this state, but because a responsible way to handle matters is to put a spending plan together that addresses all the needs and send it to the governor on that basis. Mr. Speaker, there's been charges that there's been a buyout or a sellout or some kind of an agreement made. Let me say to you, Mr. Speaker, and to the other members of the House, that if any agreement was made, and of course it's clear that there was one, the agreement was made on one's principle. The agreement was made because we agreed with the man on the third floor that the one thing this legislature should do is present a responsible spending plan to him, and that he should have on his desk all at one time the total spending package. Because we agreed with that basic principle that he expounded from day one of this session, because we agreed he needed a total spending plan, yes, Mr. Speaker, we're in support of the governor and the action he's taken. Mr. Speaker, it doesn't reflect any type of vindictive attitude or sellout to the people of this state. Instead, Mr. Speaker, I think it reflects a real commitment to the people of this state that the spending plan has to be responsible and has to be presented all at one time.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Indeed, it must be easy to say that we agree with the gentleman on the third floor because he didn't have a total spending plan when in fact it would be just as easy to say, as long as we got ours and the rest of the state didn't get theirs. I think that that is probably the more appropriate reading. Mr. Speaker, there has been a spending plan presented to the governor, and it was presented to him time and time again by our finance chairman and others. And there are members on this floor that are very fond of saying that we must have legislative reform. We must look to the National Conference of State Legislators for some direction in this regard. We went so far, Mr. Speaker, as to hire their people to come up here to tell us what we should do as far as reform goes. And one of the things that they recommended is that we break down the capital budget into separate bills so that those separate bills would be very clearly identifiable. And, Mr. Speaker, they were not sent to the gentleman on the third floor piecemeal. They were all sent to him within a couple of days of each other, all seven. He could look at all seven of them. He could identify with the dollar amounts in them. He could identify with a spending limit. He has been told over and over and over what the loans package would be, what the capital budget would be, what the operating budget would be, what new legislation would be. It is not as if though he didn't know. And those that would lead you to believe that he did not know, then does not leave much credence to his intelligence considering the fact that he's been told time and time again. Mr. Speaker, we had a young gentleman speak on this floor earlier from North Pole, and he so aptly put it, and that being that we don't look to the needs of this state on a regional basis or a community basis, but that we look to the needs of this state as a whole. And while it would be very easy for me to vote for this amendment since it affects the community that I represent first, but ultimately I represent the whole state as all of us do. And in so doing, Mr. Speaker, we have to look at the total needs of this state, not just those of one community. And that's why when we put together the budget, we try to see to it that the minority, for example, is treated fairly in that budget, that all regions of the state is treated fairly. And of course, the minority might have liked more than $32 million, but so be it. That's what they got. And I consider that fair. I remember very well when we were in the minority, and it wasn't so fair. And Mr. Speaker, I know that I've strayed far from the amendment, but the one thing that I do wish to say that it, on this particular amendment, that it would be very easy for those of us from the largest community in this state to vote for it. But I so remember a TV commercial that ran during the last gubernatorial race that showed this state being divided and torn asunder. I believe it was a Little Red Rooster ad or something like that. And I certainly do not wish to participate in tearing the state asunder as this type of amendment does. Rather, I choose to come into this body and cast my vote for a veto override for the total state that brings this state together. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Abood.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've been looking this amendment over pretty carefully. Now, I'd do about anything, and I mean anything, to get that $7 million back in there for Northern Lights, because that's a very dangerous thing, and I think it would be comfortable for the governor to ride by that every day because his house is up there. And it is a good amendment as far as that Section 12 goes. However, until I got a couple of statements told to me this morning that the reason for the veto of that $7 million was because it was not alphabetically listed, and therefore it was at the bottom of the list. So I guess the mayor's has got to take the gas pipe on that one. And actually, it wasn't a priority because of that alphabetical listing. And right now, Mr. Speaker, I can assure you, there are meetings going on in Anchorage, in my area, in my district, changing the name from West Northern Lights to Aardvark Avenue. And maybe, just maybe, we'll get that $7 million. Now, this amendment, in reality, is against what the governor wants. I don't know, there's no reason for the amendment. It has no merit, number one. Number two, there's absolutely no reason because the governor has said, well, gee, I blundered. What a blunder. It was a big blunder. And he's thinking about putting it back. But only, I think, if we get Aardvark Avenue out there where he can read it. Two A's might do it. So I suggest very, even though this is a good one and I appreciate all you're trying to do for my district, I'd ask you very, very cautiously and very firmly to throw this thing where the sun don't shine. Thank you.
Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thought maybe you forgot about me back here. Bet you'd like to sometime. I'll bet you the distinguished representative in the forward right with the pachydermy is sitting on her desk. I'd probably like to forget about me, too, here in a few minutes. But hopefully she's not going to have that opportunity. And I guess if I was to probably stand to the test of a vote of the majority, this body, the majority coalition, I probably wouldn't be standing here anyway. But that's all right. I'm not here to serve that group. And I don't pretend to serve that group or any other group that wants to try to pull over any type of facade on the public of Alaska. When I ran for office, I ran based on the fact that we're going to make a change. We're not going to conduct business the same way we have in the past. We're not going to go the one-third, one-third, one-third routine. Mr. Speaker, you're going to tell me that you're going to jump up like good soldiers and support overriding $231 million in a total package, not individual items. Not 100th Avenue, not Northern Lights Boulevard, not the other items you see on here, but you're going to say, people of Alaska, let's jump in with both hands. Big deep into the pork barrel, folks, because we got to scoop out $231 million because I don't have the votes unless I do it that way. Isn't that the way the game's played? Well, that's what I hear being said. Unfortunately, when I've got to make a choice between jumping in, conducting business as usual, and pulling off what I think is what the public of Alaska wants to see changed, it's time to realign. Well, Mr. Speaker, I've heard a lot of crybabying in my life, and I'll probably hear more of it because I've heard a lot of threats in the last 24 hours about some of the things that may happen to me if I don't jump in line. But that's all right. I'm a big boy. Somehow I'm going to learn how this operation works around here. It's coming slow, but never lose your sense of humor, is what I was told. I'm not losing it yet, but I got close. Mr. Speaker, I know I've strayed slightly off the amendment. But I would like to bring to your attention, Mr. Speaker, that if I've got a choice, and I don't know that I saw a division of the question on the other veto right, because I haven't been around for too many of these. Matter of fact, I'm not too sure I remember any successful appropriation overrides that have ever been accomplished. So this facade that people keep coming on with it, it happens all the time and it's part of the process. The real process is that we've got to live within our means, we've got to trim the budget, and we've got to vote for those major projects that are of importance to us. Mr. Speaker, before you in this amendment is your opportunity to vote for those projects. And you don't have to haul along all the baggage of the rest of the state of Alaska. And some of them, I'm not too sure you can stand back and support. I have some problems with some of those. And if you think that it's 100% fine, so be it. But I have a little problem with that $231 million in items. And I'll stand toe-to-toe with anybody around here and debate some of them with you. I've seen people accuse people of South Anchorage, where I represent, of being jealous of downtown Anchorage because we don't have major projects. Project 80s. Mr. Speaker, what created Project 80s, what created Latouche Island, what created the Potter Valley Road, is exactly the process that you want me to condone today and not address individual needed projects before us on this amendment. You want me to jump into a big pork barrel, go deep in, take care of it. I'll challenge anybody to take on any one of the projects I've got in my district that happened to end up in there as being pork. I don't know of one that wasn't on that priority list.
If the other members of the body would refrain from offhand comments that are distracting not only to me, but to the speaker, and I'm sure to those people sitting in the gallery, it would be well appreciated.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I really appreciate that. I'd like to commend one of the people I worked with very close in that budget because she assisted me in developing those priorities and insisted that we work off priorities. We worked through that process. Some got hit, some didn't. But some did get hit. That's part of the trimming. But you don't hear me cry, baby. Mr. Speaker, sometimes the game gets a little rough. And I think that what we all got to remember is that it's, a lot of this is gamesmanship that you guys are pulling off. I don't understand it yet, but I'm going to learn. I'm going to spend a little time learning it. I'm sure I'm going to be taught a few lessons after this speech, particularly by the distinguished majority leader up front. I'm also going to keep my bathroom window shut. Mr. Speaker, thank you very much. I just want to also, in conclusion of my remarks, point out to you that if we don't vote on these today, as major capital projects for Anchorage, we're not going to get an opportunity again to deal with them as individual projects. And I think that's significant and important. I think it's important to my constituency. I hope it is important to yours. Because as I get public opinion messages and messages from people that says, I want that desperately, vote for the override, what they don't realize is they get the whole barrel with it. Unless you got a new chemistry set put together, figured out how you're going to just dip in there and hit Northern Lights. I don't see it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Gall.
Well, thank you very much. Pleasure to join in the remarks this evening. Now, I will try to be brief, and I'll try to stick to the subject. I've got one statement to make, and if you'll permit me a little bit of latitude, I would develop the background for it in brief. I think it's unfortunate to proceed in this debate by continuing to accuse the governor of vindictiveness or the majority of one thing or another or the minority. I think it's especially unfortunate that the phrases that were used in that press conference today, which I didn't hear, created the implication that that votes were bought or anything of that sort. On the other hand, it would be equally unproductive to characterize the budget process of the last 2 years as being in any sense equitable. You don't give 10% of the money to 30% of the people and call that equity or create that circumstance without the logical reaction of those people who are weak and without money going to others for mutual support. In other words, I'm not nearly as experienced as some of you, but I think all of you recognize that when you need help, you go and get it. And when you have help to offer and have something that you can gain by it, you tend to give it, and that's just the way things are. Perfectly clear to me that the majority in this House, like the majority in the other body, got everything it wanted and more than it needed. And it was only logical that some of it would be lost. And I don't think it's incorrect to state that maybe the governor or the third floor, or whatever you want to call it, was a bit overzealous and maybe in some cases even a bit careless in how those vetoes were made, but I think it would be incorrect to assume that given that group of selections, it's just as simple as that, because it's not just as simple as that, as everybody here knows. This level of veto, this selection of veto, this takes place for particular reasons and particular purposes, and clearly the legislature has learned, or will learn after the vote on sustaining those vetoes, that its power is somewhat limited. And limited it should be by the checks and balances inherent in our Constitution. I'll bring myself a bit closer to this amendment out of courtesy to the body. Last night, a statement was made in the other body by a senator with many, many more years experience than I have and most anyone else here has, And what he said was this: if we are not happy as legislators with the vetoes that have been made, or if the public is not happy with the vetoes that have been made, the logical step for us to take is to collect those high priority projects that are clearly important to the state, put them together in a bill, pass the bill, and send it up to the third floor, and it won't be vetoed. Because if it is vetoed, it'll come back to us, and each of us probably unanimously will vote to override those vetoes, recognizing our responsibility to the state. But in a context, in a budgetary context, in which, well, if you'll permit me, I'd give you an example of where I see the problem, and feel free to limit me if I go too far. Last year, a particular $6 million appropriation showed up in the House budget for the Cordova Hospital. But no other projects that affected District 2, which is a very large district, showed up in that budget of so-called statewide projects. And I asked a gentleman with a great deal of knowledge and experience, gee, do you think there'd be some way that we could kind of spread this money around? Because Cordova's only asking for $2 million, and we've got six in there. And I was told, well, you should be glad you've got anything in there. You're a minority member. I found out very clearly what the game plan was, because as soon as the governor put a couple of million dollars in his budget for the hospital, this $6 million dropped out. The governor took a look at the $6 million that had been there just before. The other $2 million dropped out. Pretty soon we didn't have anything for the Cordova Hospital, and now it took another year to get things going. To me, that's a political budget process. That's not a budget process that recognizes the substantive need for projects, that recognizes the municipal priorities, that tries to put things in balance, that tries to create balance around the state, that tries to create harmony within the government. It's none of those things. It's, you know, if you have the power, you get it. If you don't have the power, you don't, and that's fine. But this veto situation is simply an outgrowth of that context. And I assume it's going to be responded to in the appropriate fashion, which, to get back to the comments of the senator last night, was you take those projects that are really legitimately important and you put them down in a bill and you send it up to the third floor and they're going to go through. Now,